Today on Maine Calling, the right to same-sex marriage. Maine was the first state in the nation to legalize same-sex marriage through popular referendum, as opposed to through the courts, as had happened in some other states. But it was a long, windy road to get there, with failed efforts in the legislature and statewide referenda. After the law's passage, the first official same-sex marriage in Maine took place at Portland City Hall on December 29, 2012. Now there are more than 3,000 married same-sex couples in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will look back at the history of same-sex marriage, both here and nationwide, its impact, and what the future might hold. What has same-sex marriage meant to you? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downeys communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we are looking at the impact of same-sex marriage, which has been legal in Maine since December of 2012. Joining me for the hour, Mary Bonato, Senior Director of Civil Rights and Legal Strategies for GLAAD, and a leading attorney who in 2015 successfully argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in favor of same-sex marriage. And Gia Drew, Executive Director of Equality Maine, Maine's first out transgender teacher and one of the first transgender high school athletic coaches in the country. We invite you to join the conversation. What has the legalization of same-sex marriage meant to you or someone you know? What do you think it's meant to the state of Maine? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. If you email, make it short, please, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. And again, the phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back, both of you, and thank you so much for joining us. Mary, I'll start with you. I know you've both been involved in this issue for a long time and were there during those early legislative battles and referenda. But Mary, it occurs to me, Mary Bonato, that there is a generation that doesn't know a time in Maine in which same-sex marriage wasn't legal. And for those, I guess I'll just start by saying, what do you want young people and others to understand about what it was like in Maine before 2012?
Well, one thing I would say about that, I love the question, is try to imagine, you and your sibling are walking up the street with two women, and everybody thinks, oh, maybe those are the babysitters. And after marriage, people saw families. And it made such a difference to know, for other people to know, and for these kids to know that our family is a family. And I think what comes with marriage also, with that, you know, the commitment and assuming responsibilities and the protections that come with marriage, is that kids feel more secure. The family has more access to protections than they had before. There's studies about how much more access there is to health insurance now and people's health improving and so on. But I just want to say, like, people felt invisible to the point where I think G and I have both experienced, you know, talking to people who felt like, you know, if we lose this case or the referendum goes badly or this bill doesn't pass, does that mean we can't be together anymore? I mean, that's the kind of think of insecurity that a lot of kids felt. So this having marriage has really meant so much security and stability to people. And when you have court decisions on top of that, which again was not our root in Maine, our root was democracy, you know, the heart of changing people's minds and all of that kind of thing. But you know, those either way, I mean, especially actually with a vote of the people, it's a real legitimation of like, yes, you belong because we're here. And if we're going to be here, it's awesome to belong.
Yeah, and that's right. And just to make that very clear, Maine was not the first state to legalize same-sex marriage, but those states that had come before, it was through the courts. And in Maine, it was the first state to have a public referendum. And gee, I think probably both of you will want to talk about this, but I want to turn back the clock to that time. And there was a real strategic, there was some real creativity strategically, and there was a way in which the way those who were advocating for same-sex marriage changed at some point and stopped making it just about equality and more about some other things. So I'm wondering if you can take us back into how you all were thinking about changing the way you talked about same-sex marriage and how you actually on the ground did it.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jen. You know, one of the things that I've been part of and I've learned, you know, there was a, you know, some vi early victories, you know, around 2008, 2009, where the legislature and the governor actually, you know, passed same-sex marriage here in the state of Maine. But it was overturned with a people's veto in 2009. And that was crushing to folks who've been working for so many years to pass marriage equality. And I think one of the things that folks learned in the aftermath of that was we were talking so much about benefits and rights and those things. We weren't really talking about what, why do people get married? You know, they don't really get married for the these other things. You know, why are you married? And we went out and listened and asked people, why did you get, are you married and why did you get married? And the answer was, I love that person. I want to spend the rest of my life with that person. And so what we learned between 2009 and that really devastating loss in 2012 was it's about love and commitment. And we went around and we spoke with more than 200,000 Mainers door to door, in person, as much as we could, and on the phone, and had these questions about love and commitment. And then that really did change the dynamic, and it resonated with Mainers. It wasn't that Mainers weren't in favor of marriage equality, they just didn't understand it. They didn't understand that, as Mary just said, that that couple there is really just like me and they are in a love and committed relationship. Of course, they should be able to get married. And I think that was a sea change in the way we talked about marriage here in Maine and across the country.
And I'm thinking about, and either of you can answer this, the courage that it took back then for some people to be knocking on strangers' doors and saying, "I'm gay, and here's why I want to get married." And I want, are there stories to share? I mean, how did people come up with the courage to make themselves so vulnerable over and over and over again?
Well, I'll take a first stab at it, and G, I'd love to hear what you have to say. Is, you know, partly your very belonging and existence in community is at stake. You know, you're being seen as part of the people who belong here and who, you know, frankly, do need those protections that everybody else has. You know, and knowing that marriage is going to be such great protection for your family. And even apart from marriage, that is a statement about your equality or inequality. You know, this was not the first struggle we had around trying to say we're here and sexual orientation and gender identity isn't really a great reason for pushing people back or, you know, pushing them down. So there have just been a lot of, I think, build up over time. As you know, we had several referenda on non-discrimination, four to be precise, over a period of time. And I will also say another thing that I think gives people a little bit of, you know, a little bit of impetus is that there were also changes. There were changes in the law, including in the legislature, where in 01, for the first time, the legislature said, okay, insurers and PPOs and all you kinds of health insurance organizations, like you can now have domestic partnership policies. But before that, you can never get a family policy of health insurance. And in 04, the legislature passed a super limited but important domestic partnership law to say, yeah, you know, I guess if you're ill, you shouldn't be barred from your partner's side. And, you know, you shouldn't be cut out of making decisions if they die. And, you know, it was limited, but it was important. And the legislature grew it. And the courts here played a role too, you know, in terms of allowing couples to adopt, same-sex couples of married couples to adopt so that both parents would actually have legal relationship with their children. And, I could go on, but, there were really positive things that were happening along with the negative. And one of the super negative things that happened in our marriage was, a really very tough hearing in 1997, where the legislature passed, rather than have it go out to referendum, it passed a really serious anti-marriage measure targeting same-sex couples that remained the law until we repealed it, at the ballot ultimately in 2012.
Go ahead, Gia.
Yeah, and I think another piece that you were asking about, Jen, was another change about going on and knocking on those doors. I think in previous years it was mostly LGBTQ plus people doing the work, but in 2012 it really did include such a significant contribution of allies who really like said, I have a gay daughter, I have a son, I have an uncle and aunt. And that really did change the atmosphere around that we were more connected to LGBTQ plus people. And I remember this one dad, Harlan, up in Machias, and his story was just so captivating. And that video of him sitting around the kitchen table talking about, yeah, I have a daughter and she should be able to get married just like I got married. And it was just so moving. And I think people really touched, were moved by not just LGB people, but our friends and family members who are allies who really, went above and beyond.
And
Yeah,
I'm
Mary.
sorry to chime in on that just quickly. Like, I could not agree more, because denying marriage and denying protection and requiring discrimination really stresses out not just the people targeted, it stresses out those who love them and their families and their kids, but their parents and everything else. And so, like Gia, I was just so inspired in 09 and in 2012 to see, if I can just say this, like really elderly people in my church who showed up to campus. Because they thought this was absolutely the right thing and a matter of justice. And, it's hard to argue sometimes with, like, why shouldn't we try to strengthen more families who want to make this commitment? Like, why would we, if we think this is good for everyone else, why would we withhold it here? And so it's been a big group of people, lots of volunteers over the years, and really inspiring about Maine.
We're talking about 2012, but of course it was 2015, Mary, that you argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage nationwide. And I'm wondering how you assess what Maine's role was, that the referendum passing, and I should say that even though Maine was technically the first, there were a handful of states who then began passing a similar referendum or laws in their legislatures. But how did that year, 2012, when Maine passed the referendum, lead to 2015? Or did it? What were those two separate things?
Well, at the Supreme Court, they're making law for the entire nation and they're not counting states. What they're looking at is this something that's a fundamental right in our nation? Is this something that has to be required as a matter of equal protection? And they ultimately answered yes to both. But I will say, I went in knowing that there were some Maine connections on the court and that it was extremely important that in Maine, that Maine had, had done what it had done, had passed a law that was negative. It had not ever considered even a positive law. We lost at the ballot in 2009. I mean, after 09, had not considered a positive law. But that voters had changed their minds, so that people, in other words, could see, have a more realistic assessment in 2012 than the fear that predominated in 2009 about what marriage, or 2008, I'm sorry, about what marriage looked like, and what it really meant for people. So in any event, I guess what I'm trying to say is I felt like that message was really important. And from the very beginning, since we won the first marriage case, Glaude won the first marriage case in the nation en masse, we always had these comments about the Taliban in robes and this is judges and you'll never win in a legislature, except then we did. Especially in Maine and Vermont and New Hampshire early on. And then we're like, well, you'll never win in front of the people, which is why there was always this rush to go to the ballot, except then we did. And so that at that point we had, really quite a lot of support. And I think it was important for the Supreme Court to see that. It doesn't like to get way ahead of public opinion. It's sort of a ratifier of consensus. And Maine's leadership in 2012, I think, was very important in that. And other states really benefited from what Maine was doing. I'll tell you right now, Maryland, Washington, Minnesota, they were looking very carefully at how we were talking about this. And they had plenty of people in their states who had similar stories and it really made a difference.
Well, let's talk about the impact here in Maine. Gia, I looked up the numbers, and in the 2020 census, I believe it's 35, around 3,500 same-sex couples married in Maine. Interesting to me, more women than men. So that's some numbers, but why don't you tell me more generally what you think the impact is? How is Maine a different place now than it might have been otherwise?
Well, I think Mary alluded to this earlier. I think the idea that that couples were almost treated as a second-class citizen because they couldn't be seen and accepted fully in their communities, and marriage equality just sort of gave that permission for parents, for example, to go to a parent-teacher night with their partner, now married, and those type of things really have a significant and profound impact, whether that's a work outing and you get to and your partner gets to be with you, whether it's a school board meeting. I think those things are so important and really does change the fabric of how LGBTQ people are seen and here in Maine. And it also became a place where people wanted to come. I think that's the one thing that I've definitely seen people like choose Maine earlier on before marriage was passed across the country. People were saying, oh, Maine, that seems like a really great place. They're doing some really important things. Maybe I'll move there. Maybe I'll have my family in Maine. Maybe that's what I want to do. So I think all these different layers of marriage equality had such a significant impact on not just those families, and then young people seeing this happening is such a wonderful visibility piece that young people who know they're LGBTQ or questioning get to see, same-sex couples in their communities. In jobs, in politics. And I think that is a profound effect too. And I think really does help young people say, I can be me too.
I'm going to turn to Mary about how to talk about the assess the impact, but we do have to go to a break first. So as soon as we come back, Mary, I'm going to ask you that. We are talking about same-sex marriage. It's been more than a decade since same-sex marriage was legalized in Maine, and we're looking at the impact, and then we'll talk about the future. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, the right to same-sex marriage, past, present, and future. With me, Gia Drew, who is Executive Director of Equality Maine and a transgender pioneer in Maine, and Mary Bonato, the attorney who won the U.S. Supreme Court case legalizing same-sex marriage and Senior Director of Civil Rights and Legal Strategies for GLAAD. You can share your comments and questions, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, or comment on Facebook or Instagram. So, Mary, I know that you can assess the impact of same-sex marriage in many different ways, and there was actually a big report out, a big study. Tell me what this report looked at and what it found.
Absolutely. It was really a shocker and a delight to find this. This is the RAND Corporation, which, digs into policy issues and looks at something that's not gray literature about people's opinions, but apparently like scientifically reviewed studies, peer-reviewed studies. And they looked at studies since marriage began in 2003, through the present about the impact on marriage. Because again, I'm sure I'm not telling people things they don't know. Like there's been a concern, and I certainly feel with this at the Supreme Court, that if same-sex couples married, then other people wouldn't marry. It would affect marriage rates. It would affect, it would increase cohabitation and people wouldn't marry. It would, kids wouldn't have two parents, et cetera, et cetera. And, we certainly had our answers to that at the time, which is like people don't marry because some other people can't. You marry for any number of reasons. It's not a club. Anyway, so there was that issue. And I wanted to say that one thing they found looking at all these studies is that they really couldn't find any adverse effects on marriage as an institution. When you look at divorce rates, Increasing, no. Or cohabitation rates increasing, no. And in fact, on the other hand, there have been positive impacts on the people who marry and on the people who love them, in terms of improved mental health and well-being. Because it is really stressful when your family's really stigmatized and held out to be strangers to the law. So there's a lot more about that. There's a lot more about access to protections, including health insurance, and therefore better health. There's actually also a study that demonstrated the decline in suicidality and attempts at self-harm with young people when marriage in marriage states as opposed to states that had bans. Kids improve mental health overall, greater academic progress. So it's just you could slice the data any number of ways, but it all came out pretty starkly as positives only and no negatives, according to the things even that were debated in public policy and in courts for years. So these RAND studies are available online. They have a 160 plus page report, and then they have two sub reports that are much shorter and have nice graphics that address the impact on same-sex couples and their families on the one hand, and then on the societal impact overall.
Gee, I wanted to ask you, we've seen these studies my whole lifetime about whether marriage is in or out and whether people, whether same sex or not, are choosing to marry or how they feel about marriage. And I'm wondering, now that same sex marriage has been around for more than a decade, are there couples who sort of, I don't want to say either take it for granted or are actually now sort of like against marriage? I mean, where does the whole institution of marriage sit in the LGBTQ community? Is there still excitement and commitment to marriage, or maybe just like the rest of us, a lot of mixed feelings about it?
I think that's a great question. And what I've heard in talking to community members and hearing what they have feelings around marriage, that's not everyone's thing, you know. And I think the fact that we're talking about it more publicly, about what marriage means or doesn't mean to people, I think it gives freedom for people to make decisions about how they want to live their lives and who they want to live with in those situations. So yeah, some people have decided, you know, marriage isn't really for me. I don't need to do that. Or it also gives the opportunity for folks to divorce in a legal way that is actually, you know, helpful to those partners, split in a way that is equitable through the court system. And before that, there really wasn't that there for them. But I also know I've talked to some folks who are in the disability community, and I think they're still struggling to understand. There's still some penalties, unfortunately, in federal law with SSI, which is Social Security insurance for folks who have a disabled partner. If they get married, they may have to give up their disability payments. And so there actually is a bill in Congress, but it's stalled, that would sort of raise that limit a little bit so folks who have a disability can get married and not suffer that penalty. And so, you know, I think there are different views around what it means to be married, the pros and the cons, and different opinions. At least we're talking about it. I don't think everyone feels like you have to do it one way, and I think that's really important.
I'm going to go to Royce, who's calling from Penobscot. Hi, Royce. Go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my husband and I, we got married in Maine in 2013 after the referendum passed and it was legal here. And we lived in North Carolina and moved up here. We bought our place in 2005, moved up here permanently in 16. And one of the many reasons we moved up here was the acceptance and love that we have received from our neighbors, from our community. And it means so much. I'm in the fire department in Penobscot. I'm on the finance committee of the town. And, you know, it just speaks so much to Maine people to not prejudge folks, to accept people for who they are. And it's just been an amazing experience for us. And we have three children, and they love it up here. And it's just an amazing place. And not only how LGBT people are treated here, but everyone here is accepted for who they are and what they do. And it couldn't be better. I just wanted to make those comments.
Royce, thank you so much for calling. Mary, you want to respond?
Well, Royce, I just want to say congratulations. And I also, just to tie into the larger conversation here about marriage, race, and so on, you know, a big part of our claim has always been like, marriage is a basic and common right. It's basically available to anyone who's not already married and who's of age and who is not closely related to the person they want to marry. And why are same-sex couples being fenced out of that and singularly excluded from that protection? And that's, I think that that's a big piece of it, that, you know, you don't have to marry. There's no such thing as mandatory marriage, but now LGBTQ couples have that choice. And that's, so in that sense, it's very much of a civil rights issue. It's not even just about marriage per se. It's about that you can make that choice for yourself. And I'm so glad you could. And I, you know, in the people moving across states, sometimes people refer to it as foot federalism, like you go where the laws are more agreeable to you. So welcome to Maine.
Thanks so much, Royce. I'm going to move on to Scott, who's calling from Lisbon Falls. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi, I hope you can hear this. I had a little trouble, but I think one of the comments that was made was that people, evolutionary, just changed. And I'm an example of that because I ran for office and I met a number of same-sex couples who were older and had lived what was, I was supposed to with a
straight. Scott, you're kind of fading in and out. Can you become kind of closer to the mic on your phone?
That was the problem I had. I realized that older same-sex couples had lived a straight life, and all they really wanted to be was they just wanted to be able to be who they were. And I evolved into realizing that. And I'm very grateful for that.
Scott, thanks for your call. I think we were able to get the gist of it, that you personally, through meeting a lot of people, realized that people just wanted to be able to live their lives. And this is, both Mary and Gia are nodding, that this was the message that you all, more than a decade ago, helped you and many, many others helped other people realize.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. And thanks for that call, Scott. I think it really is. There is no negative impact on other people when you, you know, decide to get married to your partner or that person you love. And in fact, it's the opposite. It's a positive thing. And so I think people thought, like we talked about earlier, it's going to have the negative impact. In fact, no, it's the opposite. It's going to have a positive impact. There's no negative impact when people have the ability to get married and, you know, marry that person they love.
I'll go to David, who's calling. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Mary.
I just wanted to tie it back a little bit to the earlier conversation, too, because that idea of familiarity and getting to know people as you did is part of what really changes attitudes over time. And when we had our first referendum on marriage, I think attitudes really hadn't shifted enough. Mm-hmm. But in the intervening time, not only were there, you know, all that outreach of Mainers to other Mainers that Gia described, 200,000 contacts and discussions, but there were also some marriage developments in other states, so more and more people could see what it looked like. And I think that is just so foundational. And part, of course, what we get concerned about is when states try to lock down laws and lock down discussions. But I'm really hoping this same process will continue to help familiarity with trans and non-binary people in our state and around the nation as well.
I'm going to go to David, who's calling from Bucksport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Good morning, and hello to Mary and Gia. Thank you for all of your work. It's a pleasure that I've had an opportunity to associate with both of you in our different capacities of work. I've been doing LGBTQIA+ advocacy and activism for 40 years at this point, and this is Pride Month, so I'm going to talk a little bit about why we need to proudly keep this work going with full force and gusto. I think my change of my agenda is that I'm going to conquer homophobia in every situation where I see it, because that's the issue that still has to be dealt with. And that is, we have churches that are still saying that we are making this choice in our sexual orientation and gender identity. And we have to do something about the young people who are being raised in those churches where they hear messages of hate. And we still have huge numbers of queer homelessness. The suicide rate is still way too high in our queer communities. And until we can conquer homophobia, we're not going to solve those issues, because we have families who are willing to dispose their children or dispose of their children. And that's why we have suicides and homelessness among our community that has to be solved by not allowing churches. They get off the hook. We give them the opportunity to not have to live with, they're not required to adhere to the non-discrimination laws within their religion. And that's why I see so many broken families coming out of those churches that still speak against us as if we are trying to groom people and trying to change them to become orientations rather than heterosexual. Let's just leave it at that. So I challenge all of us that are listening to be the allies or to be members of our community that will speak against even minute forms of homophobia. When people tell us, you know, they don't mind us being queer, but don't rub it in their face. Well, it's not rubbing it in their face to live our lives openly and with dignity. And you all know this. So I'm just wanting to put that question out there. So how do we conquer homophobia at every step?
Thank you, David. And Gia, David's bigger point, I think, is that just because gay marriage has been legal now for more than a decade, or same-sex marriage, it doesn't mean that there aren't other battles to be fought. And I'll put his question to you. How do you battle homophobia?
You know, I think that's a really good question. And thank you, David, for your call. It's one of the things that we sort of talk about quite a bit when we're out, you know, working in schools or communities, is sort of figuring out how to work around the issues and people's fears, or understand where people's stereotypes are based. And hearing where they're coming from, I think most importantly, you want to find out where people are with this issue, and how can we build a stronger and safer community for everybody, knowing that we can't always get to every family, or we can't get to every church. But if we can build safe islands that connect to one another around Maine, and there are more people, and we know this, there are more people in Maine that support LGBTQ people that don't. And unfortunately, the last couple of years, there has been a sway and a pushback against our community. And I think there's some real strategies that we're working on. And how do we talk about some of the newer things? I think Mary mentioned this before, but we did such a good job talking about love and commitment in marriage. We still haven't had a national or even a local conversation. What does it mean to be transgender or non-binary? And I think those are the things we are confronted with these days, is making sure folks understand that being transgender and non-binary is natural and occurs. And we have folks who are trans and non-binary here in Maine and all across the country. We just haven't had that conversation yet. And I think that's what we need to do.
David, thanks for your call. An email here from John. I was minister at the First Congregational Church in South Portland from 1989 to 2013. After many discussions beginning in 2008, the members agreed I could offer a service of blessing in the sanctuary for same-gender couples. In 2010, as a matter of conscience, I stopped signing state marriage licenses for heterosexual couples until the state started issuing licenses for same-gender couples. In 2012, I had the first opportunity to sign both a certificate of blessing from the church and a Maine state marriage license for a lesbian couple, a small role in a sea change that brought us marriage equality. So, John, thanks for sharing that. We do need
Jen,
to take another break.
Can I jump in real quick? That's so important to recognize that so many churches have really recognized how important it is to be open and affirming, at least have that conversation. You know, just recently, the Methodist Church had a big change of heart around same-sex people. Even the Catholic Church, even the Pope, has been a little bit more open to talking about recognizing LGBTQ people. So I do think there actually is a change afoot.
And I do want to talk about legally what we may be facing, especially with some of the statements of Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito, but we do need to take another break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. Our topic today, the right to same-sex marriage, past, present, and future. With me today, Gia Drew, Executive Director of Equality Maine and Transgender Pioneer in Maine, and Mary Bonato, who argued for same-sex marriage before the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, and is also a leading attorney with GLAAD. Lots and lots of calls coming in, but you can try to get through 1-800-399-3566. Before we go back to those calls, though, Mary, I want to ask you if you are nervous, if you are worried that the right to same-sex marriage, especially nationally, could be overturned.
Yep, fair question. Everyone is aware of what the court said in the Dobbs opinion from a couple years ago when it overturned Roe v. Wade and the Casey case and eliminated the fundamental right that had existed to access an abortion under various frameworks. So I would just say this, and in that opinion, Justice Thomas issued a concurrence saying, yeah, well, under the method we used here, we should revisit some other cases, one of which was Obergefell, the marriage case for same-sex couples, Lawrence, a case that said can't criminalize same-sex sexual intimacy that occurs at home in private, and Griswold versus Connecticut, a case about access to contraception for married couples, that all of those should be revisited. So obviously that struck fear into people's hearts immediately. Is my marriage safe? And I understand that. And I want to say this, completely cognizant of the what really feels like a very dramatic change in the very short time at the Supreme Court, and that there are new rules being made. Having said all of that, I still want to say that Obergefell should be safe and that it would be outrageous to overturn it. And I want to say why. But before I do, I also want to acknowledge, like, there is no room for complacency here on anything, including but not limited to marriage. And it is extremely important that we are in touch with our senators about how they consider judicial nominees and what those judicial nominees have written and what they want to do with members of Congress, with our Senate, all of it. And so state, federal, local politics and being informed and engaged matters. And one of the things that in the Dobbs opinion, the abortion decision that the court emphasized as a fundamental error was that the court never should have decided this, should have been decided by the democratic process. And well, guess what? The democratic process is at work. And that's why you see more states now trying to create a constitutional right under their state constitutions to access necessary reproductive medical care. Actually, there's some states that are undoing their old constitutional amendments on marriage as well. California and Colorado will go to the ballot this year on that. Some other states have already done so. So I want to say there's no room for complacency, and it is a time to be vigilant and engaged. But I can also tell you about why I think it's right.
Thank you, Mary. This is Gia. And one of the things that did happen over the last few years in the aftermath of that Dobbs decision is it really did light a fire under some politicians. And it really did move folks to pass the Respect for Marriage Act in 2022. And so President Biden and bipartisan support, including Republicans, supported the Respect for Marriage Act, which would give some federal protections to same-sex couples who are married across the country, and gave protections to interracial marriage as well, which was never codified into federal law as well. So there are some more protections in federal law now that we didn't have before, but that doesn't cover states changing their mind down the road too. So I think those are really important concerns that Mary brought up.
Yeah, and well, on that respect for marriage act, yeah, sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to go to a caller, but I'll go back to you first, Mary. Go ahead.
Just quickly on that respect for marriage act, because it was bipartisan, and I will tell you a major driver on this was the LDS Church, the Latter-day Saints, Mormon Church, who really don't support marriage, but want peace and want LGBTQ people to live their lives. And so I just want to tell you that's another example of a dramatic change in a faith institution. When they saw the consequences, for example, of what it meant to have supported taking away the right to marry in California, so and what it meant for their members, and how their families and family members were struggling So I also just want to say that Susan Collins worked closely with Tammy Baldwin on that bill, and myself and a colleague, supported Tammy Baldwin on this. And it is an excellent law. It is not everything, but I will say that it is a fail-safe should Obergefell be reversed, which it should not be because it's legally correct. But should Obergefell be reversed, it would provide some protections that you still get federal protections. You know, other states should respect your marriages and so on. But really, the message from the Respect for Marriage Act is this is settled law. And that's another, even apart from our being right, it's another message from the Congress to the court not to undo this.
We'll go to Liam calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Liam. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to offer a perspective of someone who was in high school when this happened in Maine. And I believe that the first time it was the referendum was brought up, it was denied. And then maybe less than a year later, it was ratified. And there was a teacher in my high school who was gay, and he wore the next day after it was denied a red circle with the word equal in it with a slash through it. And that was so impactful for me, who was hiding myself, all while having my dad tell me that gay marriage would ruin the sanctity of marriage. And just to have that person and have someone be that vocal about it was really impactful for me, while also having like the opposite words said to me at home, you know, and that was what really inspired me to be myself, be true to myself. So I just thought that that was a important and pertinent to this conversation.
Liam, thank you so much. And Gia, you were a teacher, so I'm sure you can relate.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful to have that visibility and role models of people who are a little older than you or in your communities who are fighting the fight. That impact is so important. I remember when I was coming out as a teacher, I was thinking about myself. I didn't realize what it would mean for my students, but now I know. I've heard from other students that like it was so important to see a teacher come out. And so, yeah, I'm glad Liam called in to share that story.
Great. We're going to move on. We'll go to Farmington and Gretchen. Hi, Gretchen. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And this has been a fabulous program, and I've really enjoyed hearing from everybody, all the things that people are saying. But I just wanted to share a story. I am a writer, and I had a memoir come out a couple of years ago called Woods Queer, and it's about mine and my partner's life living in rural Maine. And one of the stories I share in the book is that in 2010, we were going to do some foreign travel, and the country we were traveling to required us to be married in order for us to go there. So we weren't married at the time, and marriage wasn't legal in Maine. So we went to Vermont, and we were kind of skeptical about the whole nature of marriage, being, you know, marginalized as we were. But we went to the town hall in, I think it was Montpelier, Vermont, and we were walking up the steps to the town hall to get our marriage license. And I had a lot of trepidation. And my partner said, "What are you worried about?" And I said, "I'm worried that they're going to be mean to us, that they're going to say something homophobic." We walked in, and the woman said, "What can I do for you?" And we said, "We're here to get a marriage license." And she said, "Congratulations." And it was just a beautiful moment. So I wanted to share that. And, you know, what was so important to us and so impactful was that we didn't think it would feel as good as it did to be married. But it felt great to celebrate our union in that way and have it publicly recognized. So sorry for the tears.
No apology. Absolutely no apology necessary. Response from our guest.
I don't know. I moved to tears too. Yes. So
well, there you go. There you go, Gretchen. You've got our guest moved to tears as well. Thank you. Thank you so much for picking up the phone. We're going to go to Mary, who's calling from Northern Maine. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hello. I have a bone to pick with one of your callers. And I would like to preface this by saying, number one, I have a brother-in-law that's gay. Number two, my mother, when she was living, had gay tenants, and they were wonderful men. They were chefs. Number three, I was working in downtown Bangor when that kid was thrown off that bridge, and I've never heard such horrible screams in my entire life. I tried to call the police from my workplace, and I couldn't get through. The line was so busy. So I respect the way you people live. I'm glad that you can be married so that you can get medical help and all of the legal help that you have. It's wonderful that you can be married. But I do have a bone to pick with the one caller that said that those of us that go to conservative churches, we have a right to believe what we believe. And we don't need people telling us we're homophobic. We don't hurt you. We respect you. We let you live your lives the way you choose to live your lives. So therefore, you should let us live our lives the way we choose to live our lives and respect us. In early 60s, they gave the Amish the right to go to school only to the eighth grade. They didn't force them to go to high school. It's a free country. Religion is supposed to be kept separate from government. So those of us that are conservative, Baptist or Pentecostals or whatever, we have a right to believe what we believe, and we don't need to be called homophobic. We love you people. We respect what you believe. Therefore, you should respect what we believe.
Mary, thank you for taking the time to call with your perspective. I want to give our guests a chance to respond before we run out of time. And I know, Gia and Mary, it was not you who said that. So, I don't have that caller back, but I was wondering what you would like to say to Mary Bonato. Would you like to say to our caller?
Mary, I really appreciate your call. I appreciated the other call too, but I really appreciate your saying this. Because it's, I think, in everyone's interest to recognize that marriage and religious belief is so central and can be so central and fundamental in people's lives, and protecting that has been imperative in our nation. So I hear you. And I don't think we want the government telling the religion what to do or the religion telling government what to do. I think it works both ways there. The only thing that I would say is, and I really, that was quite a story you told about Charlie Howard and hearing his screams. And I really appreciate that you and your community have found a way to respect all people, including LGBTQ people. Because for us, I think that rub comes in when, you know, people get to believe and act as they believe, you know, but that right sort of stops. Some people say like the fist stops at the nose or whatever, like you can't hurt other people. And I am hearing you say that you don't want to hurt other people. And I heard this other individual talking about young people who are hurt. But I agree with you on the fundamental points around you have to be free to believe what you believe. And there's a lot of us who support that.
And I want to turn to you, Gia, because a previous caller said the real fight is the fight against homophobia. I'm hearing Mary in her voice feel very hurt by being called homophobic. And I'm wondering about just the use of calling people something as opposed to telling them a story and talking to them about an issue. Name calling is not helpful.
No. I can relate to that. Having been called names, you know, much of my early life and my adulthood, I still get called names frequently. But that usually doesn't move the conversation, and it doesn't, you know, build community or understanding. And I think naming something what it is important, one, but also listening to where people are and why they believe something and hearing where they are, I think is more important than name calling. So I think we're making great progress, and I'm always willing to listen to where people are coming from, because I think, you know, that's the way we're going to make change, is meeting people where they are.
Mary, thanks for calling in. We have just about 30 seconds. John, are you able to, John in Brunswick, are you able to make your comment very quickly?
I'll try.
Go ahead.
So I'm a marriage officiant, and I work with all-in-one weddings, and I've been marrying folks for 40 years, and I just remember, just as a quick observation, when Maine became the first state to pass by popular referendum the right for marriage for Maine for same-sex couples, there was a huge flood of people. If you look at the Maine statistics in the Department of Health and Human Services, they track marriages in Maine. In 2013, about 16% of all marriages in the state of Maine were same-sex couples.
John, I'm going to have to cut you off. Are you going to say that it's subsided a little bit since then?
It's tracking at about 4%.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. And I'm sorry, I do have to cut you off because we're out of time and the clock is the clock. And I want to thank Gia Drew, the Executive Director for Equality Maine, and Mary Bonato, Senior Director of Civil Rights and Legal Strategies for GLAAD. Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Our sound engineer was Sam Tracy. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.